Welcome to National Security News' inaugural podcast. This week we're speaking with Andrew King. National Security News is a national security-focused news outlet founded by three female corporate investigators. We cover the most important national security issues currently impacting Western businesses, tackling disinformation to provide business leaders with trustworthy facts. Andrew is the Executive Director of Future Union, a collective focused on geopolitical democracy with the obvious focus of China and other adversarial autocratic countries. Andrew, lovely to have you here. Tell me more about Future Union.
Hey, Katie. Nice to be here. Thank you for having me on. Future Union itself was created to collectively bring together the private sector and public sector, mostly focused on galvanizing the private sector to take a stance against adversarial, mostly autocratic countries, intent on undermining democratic principles. And we've seen that through a number of different areas, as you know, through the capital markets, through private sector decisions, supply chains, and other stuff. And that sort of led us to where we are today. So that was the impetus, and that was sort of the moment back in 2021 when we looked at this, and collectively a group of us came together to try to again catalyze the private sector to take a stance and make a difference on this.
That's really interesting. The what was it? Why now? What was it that made you think this is something that we should do?
You know, it's funny. At the time in 2021, there were a group of us were living in Washington, D.C., and so a lot of these conversations stem from high-level activities that were going on at the Pentagon and the White House with people that are involved outside of me, and the frustration was evident and sort of palpable when they would come back from work every day. It was a challenge to pull together, sort of a bipartisan collective. Wasn't really one side or the other. It was collectively pushing back on China, and so that frustration was sort of stemmed the call it the proverbial 2 a.m. Dinner table conversations, where it was, how do we do more about this? And government's working far too slowly, or frankly, is too entrenched in relationships with China, given the past history. And so we settled on the private sector trying to do more to make a difference.
That often is the way. The private sector needs to lead the way for government to follow. Which country do you think poses the biggest threat to business, to Western businesses?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's, since the Ukraine war started, that was sort of a line of demarcation in some respects, because I think there was a lot more clarity around the world that, democratic values were not, as widely shared or transparently understood around the world as everybody sort of thought over the last couple of years. I think coming out of the 2020s and COVID and there's a lot of a focus, internally, domestically on, climate change and talk of ESG and sort of coming together on a lot of different, huge world issues. But, the viewpoint that we had was, you don't get there, without democracy leading the charge on it. And so that was sort of the impetus for, obviously, with the invasion by Russia into Ukraine, China was front and center in a lot of areas up to that point, sort of out of the spotlight, though, or they'd done a pretty good job of working in the U.S. and undermining a lot of the institutions that we had, both through funding and just sort of forced technology transfer in other areas for getting access to a lot of high technology. But then I think when Ukraine conflict happened, it sort of resettled the world on the fact that there was large powers out there like Russia that were trying to undo democratic norms. And then I think that created more of a collective solidarity around pushing back on countries that were undermining sort of the implicit contract or democratic fabric that underlies sort of rule of law countries, and then all eyes were on China.
And it couldn't be at a more critical time, really. What with the U.S. election coming up next year, do you see there being any kind of threat to U.S. democracy posed by any of these hostile foreign states?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because this is the sort of stuff that you do with the disinformation and coverage. Obviously, your investigative journalism background. You know, who knows what's going to happen? There's people that are far smarter than me that are closer to the disinformation and sort of how countries that are averse to U.S. interests would use those again. You know, in upcoming campaigns. And I think what we're seeing right now with the issue of the Obama bin Laden diatribe rolling on TikTok, which obviously is ByteDance. Chinese owned, and you know, that's a whole different conversation for probably another segment. But you know, I think there's a lot of different ways that you can have conversations that focus on the challenges of sort of a free and fair election, and at the edges at least trying to undermine those for the electors. And so, you know, that's the nice part about the U.S. It is free, fair, democratic, not always perfect, obviously far from perfect, but at the end of the day, there's opportunities to sort of exploit the white spaces in you know, our election and how it works. And so readily expect that there'll be attempts on that. Now, how successful they'll be, that's, again, for somebody that far smarter than me that deals with this stuff.
What can the private sector do to protect our democracies? How can they get involved? What can they do to help?
Yeah, so a couple months ago, we actually published our Index for Democracy, which actually was a ranking and grading rubric on 180 of the largest companies in the United States, and looked at their entanglements with China and Russia. And the specific focus at this point is mostly China, because a lot of the companies have exited Russia in some way, or at least said the right things about it. China's still a completely different story, and so I think what we need is still we're trending the right way, but frankly, it can't happen fast enough to at least in our view separate those supply chains from, you know, places where China can exert pressure and influence on those businesses and executives to sort of get what they want, be it that intellectual property theft or, you know, even just making money. And so what we saw from the APEC conference last week was, you know, the idea that President Xi Jinping, you know, was having dinners and sort of courting the U.S. private sector, because it recognizes that corporations are still essential to sort of achieving their long-term goals. And so I think the faster that we can divide and separate a lot of those nefarious activities, you know, from the free markets, the better we're just going to be. I think it's relatively obvious.
Some of our most high-profile business persons are reliant on China and Chinese exports. How do we move away from that? I'm thinking, obviously, critical minerals and things like that. How do we either move away from it or protect ourselves from a hostile China when we're so reliant on some of their exports?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think, you know, our friends in Australia have done a really good job of focusing attention on these sorts of issues. Increasingly, and having been on the Hill even recently, the nice part is there's bipartisan consensus. This is really important. So one of the proposals that we have is focusing more of the attention on this from transparency perspectives with the Securities and Exchange Commission for public-private companies. And so I think there's a lot more that could be done to ensure that those conflict minerals, rare earth minerals, stuff like that, adhere to a process that sort of either separates those from you know, China, or at least is accounted for, and so we can track it. And so I think that's in the past, a lot of obviously the semiconductor battery things like that, we've relied on a lot of those minerals coming from areas that are in conflict or adversarial countries. And so time will tell how quickly that actually happens, though. But relatively obvious, I think, in my mind for where we need to get to.
And you've released a list called the Intrepid List recently. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. So the attempt for the Intrepid List was actually to elevate the investors, because the capital markets are really critical in sort of this in the clash that's upcoming, to highlight and give credit to a lot of the investors that have sort of been very principled in their investment, either not taking capital from adversarial countries or not investing in those countries. And so this was an attempt to sort of highlight and give credit to a lot of the people in the funds that oftentimes fly underneath the radar. And, again, it's something that I don't think has been done before, and that's one of the reasons we took it on. And the sectors that comprise sort of the critical sectors to, geopolitical democracy and future of geopolitical democracy, they're pretty broad. I mean, it ranges everything from artificial intelligence, which everybody's focused on, but cybersecurity and biotechnology and autonomous vehicles, the list goes on and on. So it was a pretty broad undertaking. And frankly, I don't think you when you start something like that, you hope you capture, call it the 80-20 rule and 80% of what you want. And I think we got, I think it turned out really, really well from my perspective. But the goal, I'm sure we left people out that were equally deserving. And, again, we did the best we could. But I think it is, the feedback's been really good on it so far. And we'll just sort of continue to update it and make it more accurate as we go forward.
It's a really interesting endeavor, and it's a very interesting report that you've put together. Do you think you'll ever manage to, or that we'll ever manage to, put together or get companies like Google or Facebook or Alphabet, I suppose, on board, committed to not working with China, committed to not selling AI technologies to hostile foreign states? Do you think that's ever something we'll be able to do?
It's slow going, or slower than I'd prefer. But, I think over the last, obviously, maybe it's simplistic, but the demarcation point of sort of Ukraine conflict, I think, opened a lot of corporate executives' eyes to the geopolitical risks that were out there, well beyond sort of the global moment of kumbaya that a lot had been looking at through, the sort of the ESG lens, which, is obviously more polarizing now. But that being said, the democracy angle had never been front and center in this debate, which I think, frankly, was an oversight in a lot of the, the well-meaning people that, sort of wanted to see a better future, but just sort of avoided the democracy angle to it, the human rights abuses and things like that were going on in China. And so I think the focus now of geopolitics has come, full circle. And I think those corporate executives, they can't, it's unavoidable now. It's a bipartisan issue, which is culturally, I think, been really a focal point. And so I'm hopeful that, as we get new areas for putting supply chains in other countries, in India, Vietnam, and other places that are cost competitive, you'll see companies that will, willingly, as quickly as they possibly can, move operations out of, those adversarial states and not give them the leverage on the US or corporate entities that they've had for far too many years now.
I mean, that would be amazing, wouldn't it? Have you had any support, bipartisan or not, from the U.S. government?
Yeah, I mean, I think the nice part is this collectively, you know, the consensus has come around to the idea that everybody on both Republican and Democrat, this is not a single party issue, which I'm not sure you could really say 2 years ago. Now everybody's come around to what the threat is that's out there. And so the progress has been pretty astonishing over the last couple of months. I think having conversations with senators, representatives, and frankly, a lot of well-meaning folks on both sides that may not agree on all issues, but this is sort of broad consensus. You know, there is an interest in doing more. And so, you know, we're doing more. We're talking a lot more about some proposed legislation that they can do and offering up some ideas. So I'm really optimistic that if we continue to sort of push forward and we can get, you know, Congress, the White House, and everybody sort of moving the same direction, you know, we'll get to where we need to be. The question is, I think, you know, there's a time period here that's really critical. And when you talk to people, especially dealing with the high technology, frontier technology that we're dealing with, you know, that could be anywhere from, you know, 12 to 48 months of really, you know, who wins the technology clash between, you know, as the leader in a lot of these different areas. AI is the one that everybody's kind of thinking about right now. Artificial intelligence is you know, what are the broad strokes, and frankly, how does, you know, is there some sort of a model that keeps that somewhat constrained, but also moving forward in sort of a disciplined and programmatic way. And, you know, but I think, I don't know if you had asked me 2 years ago if I thought we'd be where we are now, that I would have said that. And now I think everybody's at least rowing in the same direction, but more to come. So good question, though.
Definitely. I mean, congratulations on how far you have come. I was going to pick up on something you said earlier about, and just about how largely governments are agreed on their stance with regards to Russia. However, there is a faction, I won't name names, in the US government, isn't there, that in fact is pro-Russia, isn't it? That would be, that wants to withhold aid to Ukraine and argues that the right thing would be for Ukraine to cede its lost territory and try and end the war that way. Do you think that is because of Russian interference, misinformation, disinformation campaigns? As we know, Russia has invested a significant amount of money in its bot farm, the IRA. Do you think it's got to do with that? Or is there genuinely a genuinely pro-Russian faction in the US government?
You know, this is sort of the stuff that you cover a lot more and you're closer to, but tough to know from my perspective. I think we're looking more from the corporate side and the private sector. As I look at it from, you know, who's pushing different agendas, you know, the nature of politics, whether it's in the US, the UK, where you are, you know, there's a lot of grandstanding that goes on, and that can be for a lot of different reasons. And so when I look at it, I think everybody's thinking about it the same way with regard to where we need to end up. But the question is, how do we get there and who gets credit as we go through it? And, you know, as we saw with the in the U.S., picking a new speaker in the House, it can be pretty contentious in actually how you make the sausage. And so I think it's probably from my, and again, this is not an expert opinion on politics, but I think it's probably one of those ideas where extracting certain political wins, oftentimes it's posturing rather than real substance. And so my hope is that, you know, there's not a real pro-Russia lobby that exists. And this is more of that grandstanding. But that being said, time will tell, I think. And I think that in the end will end up working itself out. But I don't know how long that'll take or when it'll happen.
Well, fingers crossed soon, I suppose. And so what's next, do you think, both for Future Union and for the US? So you spoke briefly about the elections next year. But what do you think's going to happen over the next few years?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we continue in the same path that we're on, it's on the right trajectory now. And so the conversations that I'm having on the Hill and that, frankly, the group collectively, is sort of pushing, I think we have a lot of people that are saying the right things behind the scenes. Now it's getting out there publicly and sort of telling shareholders and others that this is what we've got, we're going to have to do. This is the principal stance that we need. And I think to some degree, the investment community has been a laggard in some of this. And that's one of the reasons we created, the Intrepid List the way that we did is, I mean, these are the people, these are the firms that are doing it the right way. And so if we can get other firms to sort of follow suit, then it means sometimes, avoiding certain investments that are in China. That may mean, taking a principled stance in those investments where it's tough to discern who the limited partners are that are coming into a venture fund. And that may mean giving up money in some respects, but I mean, that's the new world order I think we're in. And, we can't lose sight of the fact that, the threat is real. We can't continue to sort of sacrifice or hand over a lot of the cutting edge technologies to those adversaries, even if it results in immediate profit. The long term game there is China and others win, and we lose by giving up those technologies. And that's one of the things that we're seeing now is some of the semiconductor aspects that played out over the years. Those issues are coming home to roost. And, there's numerous examples of the last couple of years where even CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment, probably should have reviewed some of the deals that went through, but didn't either have the power or there wasn't enough interest in Congress to give them sort of the authority to do it. And, some of the deals that were done with China and others probably should not have been done. But did get done, and a lot of critical technology got transferred to adversarial countries, and we're paying the price now.
And that's not even touching on the Taiwan issue and the computer chips out there.
A lot to unpack here, but that's why that's why we put this together, and it's the hope and goal is that we can move the needle in a little way through the group. And, if we're able to do that, that's sort of success, a marker of success for us. And so that's sort of, if we look back and I'm looking ahead, maybe 6 months or a year from now, if we've convinced, more companies to have made sort of the right principal decisions, more investors, capital allocators and others, then it's all been worthwhile.
Well, this is, it's fascinating. It's really interesting, and what an amazing project. Is there anything you'd like to add before we wrap up?
No, this was fun. I very much appreciate you having me on. I think we need to do this again. This is the nice part about this is this changes so quickly. So, give it a month and I think we're in a new situation that we're in. But by all means, appreciate you having me on and thank you for the time today.
No, my pleasure. Very much. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Nice to chat. Bye-bye.
Bye.